You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. I'm historian Christine Morgan, and I'm so excited that you've joined my friends at Queen's Podcast for Tudor Week. Heads up, before we dive in, Katie and Nathan use strong language. So if you don't like that, this isn't the show for you. But if you love the Tudors and other history content, including TV show reviews and author interviews, find me on the Tudors Dynasty podcast or on the Untitled History Project YouTube channel. Or just listen to more Queen's podcast. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the episode.
I love this cocktail, Nathan.
Yes, it's called the Homewrecker.
And why is it called the Homewrecker?
Because we're talking about Anne Boleyn. So, full disclaimer, we both don't agree with that label, but history's a bag of dicks.
She's been viewed as a homewrecker. So, Homewrecker cocktail, here we are.
So, what it is strawberry vodka, rum, peach schnapps, and then orange juice until your taste buds delight.
I can, like, the peach schnapps just kind of hit me. Like, I felt like it was undertones until I was, like, on my third sip. And then it was like, hey, schnapps, what up?
That's my nickname on the weekends.
Hey, schnapps.
I don't know. Anne was probably born in about 1501.
Probably at Hever Castle, which is in South England. And probably the middle of three surviving children.
There's also a theory out there saying that she was born in 1507, and those people kind of believe that she was the oldest child, and some believe that she was born in Bleeding Hall.
We're going to go with the assumption that she was born in 1501, and the second of three children. That's our story, and we're sticking to it.
And we talked about this before in previous podcasts. They really didn't record when the women were born at
that
time.
Because...
And the census was a bag of dicks, and they only recorded the birth of men. So
I really want us to make, if we ever make swag, I want to make some tote bags that say bag of dicks on it.
Oh my God, yes. I want some.
So anyway, her parents were Elizabeth Howard and Thomas Boleyn. So Anne's mom was from this Howard family, and they're a really old, really prestigious family in England. Elizabeth Howard's dad was the Duke of Norfolk, and by the time Anne was born, her brother was the Duke of Norfolk.
So Anne's mom's side, the Howard family, big fucking deal, bougie as fuck. And we could go down that whole rabbit hole of the Howard family, but one thing that I read was that Anne's grandma on her mom's side was actually a lady in waiting to Elizabeth Woodville, who we did an episode on, and a lady of the bedchamber for Elizabeth of York, which we have not done an episode
on. That's Henry the Eighth. That's Elizabeth Woodville's daughter and Henry the Eighth's mom.
Mom,
yes.
They're all named Elizabeth and Mary. And
her dad's family wasn't, like, her dad's family now, like, in the present time when Anne was born, was noble, but, like, they're not. They're a little bit more of the social climbing. They're not as old a family. But they're also not like the fucking peasants off the street that history has written them to be.
So what I read about her father's, like, dad, which would be her grandfather on her dad's side.
Or was it her father's grandfather?
Her father's grandfather. Yeah. Sorry.
No, it's okay. The schnapps.
The schnapps. He was a mad hatter who rose through the ranks. So, well, he was a hatter. He made hats.
Yes.
And he made a lot of bank, and he rose up through the ranks there and served as the Lord Mayor of London, which was a pretty big deal. And, you know, Thomas was kind of reaping the benefits of that.
Though I think the Boleyns, since they started at the bottom, now they're here, they were, especially Thomas, was an ambitious fella.
Yeah, like I said, I think that they're, like, businessman. Like, he was a businessman.
Like, even marrying someone from a Howard family, you know, that shows that, like, he pulled his weight around. He, like, made things happen. Though, I'm sure a lot of our listeners have watched The Tudors or other shows where they depict Thomas Boleyn as this really, like, kind of just, like, crummy, like, lets his ambition get in the way of everything type guy. I think he was ambitious, but not to a fault like that. That's my personal opinion. Obviously, we have no way of knowing. But.
So, she had an older sister, Mary, and a younger brother, George.
And there are some disputes on if Mary or Anne were actually older. We are going with the assumption that she was younger than Mary.
Yes,
that
Mary Anne was the second daughter. Yeah, Mary was the older one.
And they also had, so they had a younger brother, George, and then they had had two brothers, Henry and Thomas, who died in childhood, sadly.
Henry but that was, and Thomas, more names that we've had.
Yeah, more names that every fucking body is named at this time.
So the stories of Anne being from, like, this family of peasants and nobodies is just not,
it's just not true. No. I mean, her parents weren't Ferdinand and Isabella, but, like, who's fucking are besides Catherine of Aragon.
And by the way, if you haven't listened to Catherine of Aragon episode, it would be a good idea to like backtrack and go listen to that one because it kind of sets the stage.
I mean, probably not completely necessary, but it does dive into some political things of the time that we won't have time to touch here. So
Anne's early education was a time in history where girls actually got a fairly good education.
It was just fashionable at this time to educate your daughters well.
Fashion.
Turn to the left. So, you know, just like most people of this time, she was educated at home by her mother at the beginning of her life. And actually, I thought this was kind of sweet. Like, her and her mother seem to have had a really friendly, loving relationship, which we get so many queens who...
Mom's dead.
Their mother is dead from giving birth to too many children, or their mothers were crazy ambitious bitches. It seems like... her and her mom were just, like, got along. So that's kind of nice.
So a turning point in Anne's life is that Anne's dad, Thomas, gets appointed as the ambassador of Austria. And he goes over there to get his diplomacy on.
Get your diplomacy on. he meets Margaret of Austria, and they become friends. Margaret of Austria, I would like to do an episode on one day. She is super fascinating, and I wish I would have had time to research her more.
There were so many rabbit holes with Anne
Boleyn. There are so many rabbit holes with Anne Boleyn. Basically, what you need to know for this story, Margaret of Austria was the governor of Austria, probably the most powerful woman in Europe at this point. And she was in charge of the education of all the Habsburg children, which was like the biggest royal family in Europe. They were like, Habsburgs were in the Spanish royalties. They were in like the Holy Roman Emperor's
family. They even
family
had a genetic deformity called after them.
Yeah, the big ass jaw, chin. Yeah, Thomas, like right away is like, I want to see if I can get one of my kids in here to get educated with these people.
Which is a good idea.
Yeah, and Margaret was like, sure, I'll take one of your children on.
And she is such a good role model.
Such like, a good role
strong,
model.
Strong, powerful woman. I think this is where Anne really started to understand.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, so spoiler alert, he chose to send Anne over there.
Oh.
I think Anne was his favorite child. Like,
yeah, agreed.
She was the smart one. She was the witty one. She wasn't the most beautiful one of his children, but what she lacked in traditional prettiness at this time, at least, she made up for in, like, being funny and witty. And smart. So
her dad sends her to Austria and she Margaret to do her finishing school.
She got the best education. This is 1513. She got the best education anybody could hope for, boy or girl.
Right.
And really, I mean, Henry VIII wasn't raised thinking he would be king, so he got a subpar education to his brother Arthur. Still a really good education because he was a royal child. So him and Anne probably had educations on the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like in line with each other.
She didn't take this opportunity for granted either.
No.
She knew that this was a chance to rub elbows
in
with all the
words
rich royalty.
Of Alexander Hamilton, a la the play Hamilton, who oh was gosh. Like, she was like, I'm not throwing away my shot.
You went there.
Yeah, so, she just charmed the pants off of everybody.
Like, yeah, Margaret even wrote to Thomas that Anne is so pleasant for her young age that I am more beholden to you for sending her than you are to me.
And I mean, like...
That's a compliment for Margaret.
That's a compliment. That might be a little bit of hyperbole, like, but still, even if she's just being nice, that's crazy. And that's another place where, so a lot of people, like we said, think that she was born in 1507 instead of 1501. This is one of the reasons I think the 1501, because in 1513, she's going over there, she's 12. And that's a time when a girl would do her finishing school, because yeah. she's about to be, like, 12 or 13 is about, like, marriageable
so
age.
So she was born in 1507, and she went over there, she'd be, like, six.
And, like, just I don't know. Make... I mean, it's plausible. But
it's
just
a big age gap.
It's a There's big a,
and that's
age
in,
gap.
In terms of a learning curve, six and 12, 13, like, yeah. that's, like...
Yeah, let's move on, but I do want to talk about the age gap more a little bit later.
But her education really took off at this point. It was all of the liberal arts, like poetry, music, dance, art, history. Oh, yeah, and she learned how to perfect it.
Français.
Parlez-vous français?
And this is a huge deal. This is a huge deal in court.
She took to the French language, the French culture, the French everything, like a French fish to French water. Like
she got French fried.
She she got French fried hard. She loved it. No, she like later on in life, people would be like surprised when they're like, "Oh no, that's an English woman. That's not a French woman." People are like, "What?"
Because she's just a big deal at that time to be able to speak French. Because...
Yeah, it's like English now. How no matter where you go in the world, people know how to speak English. That's how French was then. Like you needed to know how to speak French. Hit me up with some orange juice.
Oh, Jay.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Okay, that's good. So then, after a little bit of schooling, she becomes Margaret's lady in waiting.
No big deal.
And then, after about a year in Austria, King Henry VIII sends his sister Margaret over to marry the King of France. Margaret's a teenager, and the King of France is like 55.
What? But Anne's dad ends up scoring a position for her as the lady in waiting to the freaking Queen of France.
It's a huge fucking deal for someone so young, but a lot of it had to do with, okay, she's so smart and she's fluent. She's so fluent in both English and French that it just made sense.
Yeah, there's a French king and a English queen.
Yeah, and so her and her sister Mary both went over to France to be ladies-in-waiting.
But then that King Louis XII died like 3 months after they got married.
And I'm sure Margaret Tudor was like, oh, thank God.
Right? I'm so glad I don't have to deal with this.
Yeah, so the English queen goes home, and most of her ladies-in-waiting go home. But Queen Claude was about the same age, so the new Queen of France was about mm-hmm. the same age as Anne. They really got along, so she decided to keep Anne and her sister on as ladies-in-waiting.
She served Queen Claude for like 7 years.
7 years, which is another reason that I think she was born in 1501, because who's going to be a lady-in-waiting when you're eight, you know?
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But Queen Claude was the
Let's
mother
talk about her for a hot
of
second.
Henry II of France, who you'll remember from the Diane de Poitiers episode.
Yeah, which... that was Diane's boo. So that means Anne Boleyn and Diane de Poitiers knew each other.
Mind blown.
Like, I did go down a rabbit hole and really tried to find places where I could definitely place them at the same place and time. There's no record of them like being at the same place, except for that we know Diane de Poitiers was present at the birth of Henry II. I mean, Anne Boleyn was Claude's lady-in-waiting, so she, like, there's no
she
record of her being, but it's implied.
She should have
That
been
she would, I mean, that's, like, the number one job of a lady-in-waiting to a queen, be there when she's having her babies and, like, make yeah. sure she's okay, you know, help her or whatever.
No record, but probably happened.
I mean, they must have known each other.
And I'm sure there were plenty of other events that happened that yeah. they may have, like, crossed paths.
I mean, if they were both in the royal household and born, like, around the same time, so they'd been about the same age. Anyway, that was a rabbit hole I went down on.
Sounds like it. So haters are gonna hate, and I read this as well that she learned to be a big slutty McSlut slut here.
And I don't believe it. I don't buy it.
No, Claude, the queen that she was a lady in waiting for, was super pious.
So I don't think Anne would have spent any time horning it up, because she was like a really trusted lady to Claude. Like, they were tight.
Yeah.
But her sister Mary, however, did have some fun a little bit. And it's believed that she slept with French king.
Yeah, apparently she got quite the name for herself at French court.
So I had a talk with our friend and friend of the show, Christine. Go check her out. But she's writing her thesis on Mary Boleyn. So I asked her, tell me what you think about Mary and Anne's time in France. Christine was like, Claude had more people in her employ than any French queen ever had. She had 285 people working for her.
Wow.
And so there were more women at the court than there had ever been at any time. So all the male courtiers are just like, tongues wagging, like, oh,
you know,
like,
doing.
Christine explained to me, it was like, yeah, you were pious when you were out and about. You were like saint in the street, whore in the sheets type thing. Christine, who's writing her fucking thesis on Mary, believes that, yeah, Mary probably slept with the king, but probably wasn't like a regular mistress. It was probably like a one or two time thing, yeah, or whatever.
Of course, the word got spread around that once it happens once, it's happened 20 times.
And so Daddy Boleyn, who, you know, is still an ambassador to mainland Europe at this point, hears this. And he's just like, you're coming home, and brings Mary home, but leaves Anne there, which, again, like, if she was whoring it up, and he brought Slutty McSlutface Mary back home,
he would have brought her back home.
So
but
I
she
think,
was the daughter that he trusted that had
so
the knowledge.
I think that's evidence that she wasn't, that she was holding up a good reputation and not, you know, doing anything that her dad wouldn't be proud of. Do you agree?
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. And if Anne wasn't already his favorite daughter, after this, he was just like...
And the whole thing that I read is that if anybody ever confused the two of them, it was because it was really Mary and not Anne.
Yeah,
Anne.
Yeah.
If Anne being labeled as a slutty McSlut-slut, it was because... Mary only slept with the king like once or twice.
Because they confused it. Because
they called them the Boleyn girls. Like, oh, yeah, it's the Boleyn girls.
So they would get them confused. So they'd be like, oh, Anne slutted it up in France. And it's like, no, you're thinking.
Hey, y'all. Spooky season is here. And if you're looking for a show to whet your appetite for a little haunted history, then I'd like to invite you to check out Southern Gothic, a chart-topping history podcast that explores some of the most infamous legends, folklore, ghost stories, and hauntings of the American South. We've covered all sorts of stuff from the Bell Witch of Tennessee to the disappearance of the Confederate submarine, the H.L. Hunley, not to mention our deep dives into the local lore of some of America's oldest and most haunted cities, like New Orleans, Charleston, and St. Augustine. So, if you're ready for a little good old-fashioned Halloween storytelling with a commitment to quality historical research, then be sure to check out Southern Gothic today. It's available now on all your favorite podcast apps.
Have you ever wished that you had a direct line to your pediatrician to ask them all the questions that constantly crop up while parenting? Well, we hear you, and we have been there too. That's why we launched the Bites of Health podcast. Every morning, we'll answer a commonly asked pediatric question in 5 minutes or less. You can tune in while you're making your second cup of coffee or from the school drop-off line. Who are we? I'm Dr. Jess Steyer, a public health scientist and also co-host of the Unbiased Science podcast. Every day, I'll chat with one or both of your new pediatrician besties, Dr. Dina DiMaggio, a general pediatrician, and Dr. Anthony Porto, a pediatric gastroenterologist. We'll talk about all the things related to our kids' health, from dealing with a colicky infant to navigating puberty in the teenage years. So be sure to tune in to Bites of Health, now live on all podcast platforms.
Exactly. I hate the word slut, but we're trying to put our minds into
that time frame.
Yeah, 16th century.
Well, what they were was getting it on with some powerful men.
Some cool stuff that she was probably involved in while she lived in France. So she probably would have met Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah, I read this, and it was like around the same area where Queen Claude was like loved to go whenever she was pregnant, and she was barefoot and pregnant at that time.
Yeah.
So...
Well,
we talked about
in the Diane de Poitiers episode how King Francis, Claude's husband, was like obsessed with Italian art, Italian architecture and everything. Francis had invited this guy, Da Vinci, this guy.
Leo.
He invited Leonardo da Vinci to come like live out his old age in France, and he came to court several times. And so if he would have met the queen, and probably met him. So that's kind of cool.
Right.
She was translator to like anyone that came from England. So as at a very young age, she would have like been on the radar of like really powerful people from England.
Yeah. And one of those things that we talked about in the Catherine of Aragon episode that's here now is going to be the Field of the Cloth of Gold.
Yeah. Which was basically
just a bunch of gilded peacocks going around acting like
the Field
like
of Cloth
rich.
Of Gold in a nutshell was the French and English court got together to measure dick sizes of the king.
I was about to say the same thing. I was going to interrupt you and say the same thing.
We've known each other too long. But Anne would have been there serving Claude and also serving as a translator. And her dad was also there since he was an ambassador. So, aw, family reunion.
Yay!
I just think she really strived in France. I wish I could just end this story with, and then she married some French count and lived in obscurity.
Then we wouldn't have Protestants if that happened.
Well, speaking of Protestantism, we mentioned a little bit in the Diane de Poitiers episode, the court of Henry II's dad, whose name is Francis, he was a little sympathetic to Protestants. Mm-hmm. So that was this court. So, IDK, maybe she learned something there that'll come into play later. Hashtag spoiler alert.
What did she look like, Katie?
So, here's what we know. She was brunette. She had olive-toned skin, brown eyes, and she was flat-chested.
So, at the time, blonde...
None of that was popular at the time.
Yeah, blondes with big boobs. So, Katie, you would have been fine.
I would have been just fine. And so, I love Natalie Dormer as portraying Anne Boleyn. I feel like she embodies her so well.
Character-wise.
But when it comes to, like, actual looks... No. Besides the brown hair, like, she has blue eyes, she's curvy, she has, like, that porcelain skin. Of all the people that play her, I think, on paper, Natalie Portman probably looks the most like her, because she's slight and skinny and flat-chested and brown hair, brown eyes, even though she probably was nowhere near as pretty as Natalie Portman, because, Jesus Christ, Natalie Portman's beautiful.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But yeah, at the time, everyone was like, oh no, her sister Mary is much prettier, because her sister was blonde and stuff.
Sister may be prettier, but she's got the smarts.
Yes. So...
There were rumors that she had a sixth finger...
Totally false.
Totally fucking false.
Because back then, they viewed any physical deformities as like...
witchcraft.
A reflection of your soul. And then partly true, probably, was that she had moles. Her haters wrote that she had all these moles and like warts and shit all over her body. And that was a sign of witchcraft. But like...
I honestly think that it was like a beauty marker, like just one random...
I mean,
like,
who doesn't have moles?
I have them on my shoulder.
I have a beauty mark on my cheek. I have a mole right here on my cleavage. Like, they're normal, you know?
Yeah.
But back then, if you had an excessive amount of them, it was considered, like, a sign of witchcraft.
Yeah, because I remember, like, whenever I went to a psychic and they did, like, a palm reading, if I had, like, a freckle, they were like, oh, that means that you've got a little bit of psychic ability.
Oh, really? So they're still kind of, not that I think that's witchcraft,
but there's still that association.
Very interesting. She was obviously attractive, though. Because she wouldn't have caught the eye of so many suitors.
Yeah, and they were all noble men who are used to seeing really pretty women around.
If she was ugly. Because, like, there are so many, people that wrote about her right after her time calling her, like, ugly and hideous. She simply had to have been pretty.
So
she wouldn't have caught the eye of these guys.
What I read was that the guy that wrote all of this negative stuff about her appearance was exiled by Anne Boleyn's daughter, who we'll obviously do an episode on.
One day. Oh, so Elizabeth I exiled
this dude.
So he was like, her mom had so many warts.
And an extra finger. And he even went so far as to say that's why she wore those long sleeves. Those
and a high
elegant,
neck.
And the high neck was to hide her. And that was something that Anne Boleyn was known for, was her like long sleeves and like...
Hate is gonna hate.
Right.
Time for her to go home to England. Anne was in France for 7 years when she gets called home by her dad. So she's been in Europe for 8 years, France for 7 years.
So she gets called back because there's some lands in Ireland that the Boleyns, the butlers, their cousins. Everybody's like trying to get a hold of these Lance.
Yeah, right, it's now. Like somebody on Thomas Boleyn's side of the family, and they're like disputing over this land in Ireland. They bring their grievances to the king, and the king is just like, well, don't y'all have a boy and a girl y'all could just like marry together to inherit it together and solve this problem? And Thomas Boleyn kind of reluctantly is like, yeah,
guess so.
I got Anne. But I think in his heart, he wanted to put Anne
somewhere else.
He knew what potential she had,
yeah,
to be a powerful person at court. So he didn't want to marry her and ship her off to Ireland. But anyway, so he writes Anne and is like, hey girl, you got to come home. And she was like, oh. Because, like, we really don't know Anne's feelings on this, but I assume it was, because I don't think she went to court immediately. I think she went home to Hever Castle for a little bit. How fucking bored she must have been from going from, right, the French court to, like, sit here and get ready to get married in
to
the country in England.
To your cousin that you're not really that attached,
yeah,
to.
The marriage never actually took place.
And I did read also that this marriage arrangement was just really a ploy by her father to get her back home.
So he could put her into the English court?
Exactly. And also because Mary had such an issue at court that he wanted to be like, okay, let's pull her back. Let's get her back home. Put her in English court where I know where she is.
Put our family's reputation back.
Yeah, into the English court.
But I bet she was kind of bored living back in England.
I would be too.
Her uncle, the Duke of Norfolk, got her a spot in the English court, being a lady of waiting to the Queen Catherine of Aragon.
So we don't know for sure when Anne like hit the scene here with Catherine of Aragon as a lady in waiting, but it was likely that her sister Mary was already Henry VIII's mistress at the time.
Yes, so
that
kind of
got the ball rolling.
Sister was the mistress of Henry VIII by 1522. Christine from the History Gal says that she believes that she was the mistress by March 1522.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
I'm not sure if we mentioned this in the Cathay episode. Henry was a serial monogamist, which sounds
completely
crazy.
No.
When you think about him and all his wives and everything, it sounds crazy, but he really was. That we know of before Anne, he really only had two serious mistresses, Bessie Blount,
Mary Boleyn.
And so a lot of people are like, oh, she came to court and the king immediately fell in love with her. No.
No,
she was at court for at least a good 2 or 3 years before there was any...
Didn't even notice her.
Yeah, exactly. So the first recorded presence of Anne Boleyn at court...
She was at the Chateauville pageant.
We don't know when she showed up, but it was sometime around this time, which was... The pageant was on March 4th, 1522.
And it was on Shrove Tuesday, which is the day before Ash Wednesday.
If you watch the Tudors...
They did it accurately.
That is the best portrayal I've seen of this. I think, I don't know, I wasn't fucking there, but from what I imagine it was like, that's the best portrayal. Besides the costumes they have the women wearing.
So if you haven't seen the Tudors, the way they had it set up was there were like castle pillars, mm-hmm, like on the side, and there were banners everywhere, mm-hmm, and there were women set up and men set up.
So the like plot of this play, it's like basically a play they put on because they had a bunch of
rich people,
dignitaries and stuff from other countries in town. So the plot of the play was there were these positive female attributes being held captive by negative female attributes.
And the kindness ones were like beauty and honor and kindness, blah, blah, blah.
Pity.
Blah, 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 blah.
And Anne played the attribute perseverance, which is, as we get into her story, is
irony.
It's just a little bit too on the nose.
Yeah.
Like, if this was a book, I'd be like, that was the most obvious foreshadowing ever, but it's real. She played perseverance, which means steadfastness in doing something despite difficulty or delay.
So pretty much described her.
Yeah.
And so there were these good ladies that portrayed these good attributes, and then
They were held captive by these negative attributes.
And from what I gathered, it was like there was a basement to this whole castle, and all the evil ladies lived in the basement. And the evil ladies were jealousy and scorn.
And PMS and being bad at math, I think. Then the knights come in, like, to save the ladies that are being held captive.
And the knights are named Loyalty, Gentleness, Extravaganza.
Paying for your meal, blah, 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 I don't know.
And so what I read is that they just basically had a big fucking food fight.
Yeah, yeah, they, like, threw fruits at the bad ladies.
It was dates and oranges, and then the women threw, like, rose water.
And so the ladies that were, like, the positive attributes were dressed in these white gowns with sashes with their name on it. Like,
which their boobs are showing in the Tudors.
And then the ladies who were the bad ladies were dressed in black, and then the men came in dressed as knights or whatever. Yeah, and so my only issue that I take with the way this pageant is portrayed in the Tudors is, like, the women, what the women are wearing would be considered underwear at the time. Yeah. You can, like, pretty much see their boobs through their white gowns.
I can see their outlineage.
Yeah.
Like, I can outline the boob and, like, see where the nipple would be.
Besides that, it was portrayed really well. And so she was Perseverance, the former queen of France, Henry's sister. Margaret was Beauty. I believe Mary Tudor was in it. I don't know what she played. And her future sister-in-law, Jane, was in it as well. Jane Parker. Yeah, so then afterwards, they just had this big fucking ball, big fucking feast. It was just an adorable little thing, and that is the first time Anne Boleyn is shown to definitely be at the Tudor court.
Yeah, and so shortly after she, like, arrives in England, she's in the court with Catherine of Aragon and Henry VIII. Things just start to fall apart for her marriage proposal with dear old...
It just doesn't happen.
Sonny boy.
It just doesn't happen. We don't really know why.
But she's free again.
But she has other suitors, and she becomes really popular. Like, you hear the phrase courtly love, and she was so good at playing the game of courtly love.
So it's basically like there's a rich noble man, and you just...
He pursues the woman, and she says no, 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 and he writes her poetry, and but she says no, no, no.
There's really nothing involved beyond that. There's no relations
but
involved.
But she was really good at it.
Yes.
And she became very popular. And her first, like, major suitor was this guy called Henry Percy. And she starts a relationship with him, and he's the heir to the Earl of Northumberland.
So he's super powerful, and he's quite the catch for her.
I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole about the Percy family. They're still the Earls and Dukes of Northumberland. And before this, they had been the Earls and Dukes of Northumberland couple hundred years. So they're like a super old family. Side note, you know how the soccer team that my husband supports is Tottenham Hotspur? So Hotspur, it comes from a nickname of a guy from the Percy family.
Katie, you just like sports now.
I like sports now, it turns out. Oh, fun. I told Steve that. I was like, hey, I just ran into your soccer team in my research for Anne Boleyn.
Sports.
Anyway.
Percy and Anne really seem to be in love with each other.
So, and they promise each other they're going to get married.
And that's something that if you did in court.
In the 1600s, not even just in court, like any, it didn't matter if you
in
were
public.
A duke or if you were a peasant. If you say, at this time in history, if you say in front of witnesses, I intend to marry this woman, and she says, I intend to marry this man, it's legally binding. And so they've done that.
And wish that we could say that was all.
And then they got married, and they lived happily ever after.
Nope.
That did not happen. Henry Percy is, at this time, in the household of this guy named Cardinal Wolsey, who is important. We'll talk more about him in the next episode. But he's
a little bit more in this
one. Super powerful. No, 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 Mr. Percy. We have a much more prestigious match in line for you than the daughter of a knight, quote unquote.
And Percy was serving as a page boy in Wolsey's, like, little...
Yeah, that's realm. Where he was getting his education, like his finishing school or
so
whatever.
So he was connected to Wolsey, so Wolsey obviously had power over Henry Percy.
And Anne didn't have titles. She didn't have a big dowry. It turns out that all along, Henry Percy's family, like, had already promised him to this other family without, like, him knowing. So Wolsey, when he finds out that Percy has promised to marry this knight's daughter, tears him a new one, like, for real, in front of the whole household.
Like got a new butthole.
Like, oh my god. Basically, I won't read the quotes because they're all in, like, ye old English. But in modern day, what it means is, you're stupid, you're a fucking idiot, I'm telling your dad.
And then his dad comes in and is like, you're being stupid and you're not marrying that nobody. No way, Jose.
Percy's pop, like, threatened his entire inheritance. He's like, yeah, you can marry her. You're never getting a dime from this family, and the earldom's going to your brother.
And Henry Percy's not putting up any sort of a fight on that, Avi. I mean,
I just don't get the feel that he was a very, like, intimidating figure. You know what I mean?
No.
I feel like he was kind of a hippie at this point in his life. He was kind of chill, you know?
For 1500s, he was a hippie.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So back it up. Who is this Wolsey guy? Let's talk about him for a second and why he was important.
So he was on Henry's Privy Council, which just means
was Henry's Privy Council. Yeah. Just to sum it up, he is, like, super fucking powerful. I was talking to Emily from Tudor I Hardly Know Her, a good friend of our show, and she summed it up like this. He shaped a lot of Henry's policy. He was his chief advisor. He wielded an insane amount of power while Henry was enjoying the rewards of being king. So basically, Wolsey was the puppet master, for, like, a lack of a better term.
And the king got to go hunt women and animals.
And Wolsey did all the work.
Yep.
Foreshadowing.
Good description there.
Foreshadowing a little bit later, a lot of people think Anne may have been like, he talked about me like I was a piece of gutter trash or whatever, and, like, got her revenge.
Could
later.
You blame her, though? Would you really blame her? Because he kind of did.
He didn't say a lot of nice things about her.
Yeah, and not about the guy that she loved, either. Yeah. So maybe she didn't have the best taste in her mouth. Yeah. I mean, this homewrecker drink is a lot more tasty than that bitter shit that they were drinking.
Oh! This is really good. Anyway, another possible suitor, which I don't think they ever went as serious to, like, make promises to each other, was Thomas Wyatt.
I think this was more of the courtly love that we were talking about.
Love Thomas Wyatt's poetry. Yeah. Like,
some of it was written about her.
Yeah. It's debatable, but I think at least two, like, very well-known poems were. He's credited with bringing the sonnet to England. He was very unhappily married by the time he came to court. And when they met, you know, he was married, so I don't think they ever made promises to each other or anything.
And like we said with the courtly love thing, like, this girl would go and, like, talk to this guy, and he would write all this fantastic poetry about her.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was Sir Thomas Wyatt, and he just, like, thought of all this new poetic devices, so obviously...
I mean, I think he was definitely infatuated with her, but I think it ended there.
That's it. Eventually, she caught the eye of the king.
Yeah, she may have not been this great beauty for the time... But one of her biographers wrote that she was remarkable, intelligent, quick-witted, beautiful young noblewoman. So she first drew people into conversation with her and then amused and entertained them. In short, her energy and vitality made her the center of attention in any social gathering.
And Henry loved a good, smart, intelligent woman.
Yeah, he loved to debate. He loved to, like, have... political conversations.
He liked a witty gal, and that this is no surprise that she caught his eye.
So let's talk Henry in 1520. He is not, like, the big, fat, bloated tyrant that you think of.
That's
now.
Much later on.
He's handsome. He writes poetry. He writes music. But, I mean, he's athletic. He's hot.
I think you've got, like, a little bit of a partial bias here. Because
I like I like hot gingers.
You've got a hot, tall ginger with light eyes. That sounds like your husband.
It does sound like my husband, yeah. I'm not going to lie. Hopefully my husband doesn't go the way of Henry VIII.
Wait, who would you be? Would you be Catherine of Aragon or Anne Boleyn?
Oh, can I just be Catherine Parr?
You're opting out.
No, I'd be Anne Boleyn because I'm the love of his life, obviously. Anyway. But no, so he's like hot, sexy, smart, like Renaissance man. Yeah, it's not like this old fat tyrant's coming after her.
And they legit, like, a lot of the women, like, he had a lot of people that were pursuing him as women, but yeah. They were interested in him.
Yeah.
Like, he was a catch. It's not like he's this ugly, nasty, disgusting old man, but...
Exactly. So, when exactly did she catch the eye of the king?
So, he stopped sleeping with Mary, her sister, in 1526.
Yeah.
So... probably sometime after that. In 1527 is when they first started seeing the love letters that he wrote Anne, and they are a little bit stalkerish.
That's a guess, though. Like, we assume, that's just like an educated guess from people that the first one came around 1527.
But no, yeah, they are a little bit stalkerish.
That is very, very appropriate. But, like, in the first letter that the educated guess is that it came in 1527... He says, having been for above a whole year stricken with the dart of love and not yet sure whether I shall fail of finding a place in your heart in affection.
Which basically just means I'm asking.
So that indicates if it's been, he says, having been for above a whole year. And if she got that letter in 1527, he probably first started trying to court her.
In 1526.
Pretty much as soon as he was done with her sister.
Yep.
Which, I don't know about you, but I'd give some resistance, too. Like, because it's also very much thought that, so her sister Mary had two kids while she was mistress to Henry.
Yeah.
And even though Mary's husband claimed both of the kids.
At least one of them may have been Henry's.
Yeah.
At least one of them.
So I could see why... she wouldn't be like, oh, take me. You know? It's like, you just broke up with my sister.
I know, right? And I don't know. This is something that maybe we should talk about later. But
yeah.
Catherine of Aragon, like, was accused of sleeping with Arthur. And he's sitting there sleeping with Mary Boleyn.
It's the whole dispensation. But the long and short of it, she was probably at court for about 4 years before he fell in love with her right after... he dumped her sister. So, but he took his time noticing her. But once he did, he fell in love with her hard.
Yeah, and Henry had, at this point, stopped sleeping with Catherine. Mm. So.
Yeah, he told Catherine, like, look, nothing's going to come with this.
She at that point was considered too old to have children in the Tudor times.
And he goes ham for Anne.
Yep.
After he starts flirting hard with her, she leaves court. So whether she's playing hard to get or just, like, did not want his advances, we'll never know.
Yeah, you know? I don't think she wanted him.
I don't know.
But he sent her jewels, and she sent him back. So yeah. That's what makes me think that she didn't want it.
Or was she... he had never asked, like, he had never flirted with a woman and have her tell him no before.
Oh.
So maybe he was just... excited, like, it's a hunt, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like,
so
a really,
like,
difficult
playing
hunt.
Hard to get before playing hard to get was really a thing.
Or if she just didn't like him, it was super harassment. You know what I mean? Like, super duper harassment. Around this time, Anne's father Thomas is given a title. He becomes the Viscount of Rochford. A Viscount is above a baron but below an earl, and an earl is below a duke. So it's a middle of, but like, it's not a super high ranking, but it's not the lowest either. And oh, what a coincidence that he's courting Anne. She's saying no, she's like not responding to him.
And now he's getting promoted.
And he's giving her dad a title. Like, I think that's so that her dad would be like, come on, just go sleep with the king real quick.
And then and then his brother was also appointed the gentleman of the privy chamber.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like now all of a sudden she's putting up resistance and he's going to start appointing family members
and
in power.
And at this point, I mean, to get titles, to become a gentleman of the privy chamber was basically to become like a lady in waiting. Like,
yeah.
It was so... I mean, of course they're going to start putting pressure on her, like, because look, it's good for the family. Just fucking flirt with the king back or
so
whatever.
Is it possible she was being coached at the time?
So and when you watch, like, The Tudors or Wolf Hall, stuff like that, they show her father and her uncle just being like, or the other Boleyn girl or whatever. They show her father and her uncle being like, do it, go for it. It's good for the family. I don't think her and Christine from the History Gal agreed with me. I don't think her father worked this hard for this many years for his daughters to become mistresses.
No.
I think he may have turned a blind eye, but I don't think he was pushing her into it. Her uncle, on the other hand, I'm not going to say didn't, like, try to push her into it.
Yeah, he probably did.
He seems like a skeevy guy.
So from the book that I read, which was The Lady in the Tower, it kind of depicts it as Anne was talking to her sister and gathered information from her sister and was like, maybe I shouldn't follow the same path that my sister went down.
Yeah.
From what I gathered, from what I researched, was that Anne got it from her sister, not her dad or her uncle.
I don't think her sister would have been pushing her into
Her sister,
like,
her
dad
sister
or
not,
her uncle might have been pushing her into it.
I think her
it.
Sister would have been like, hey, this is what's going to happen if, mm-hmm. if you go down this path, because look at me.
Yeah.
Like, so I think it was her sister was less coaching, more just being like, look at my situation.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So it is an interesting theory to think, okay, did she do this blindly or did she have people telling her get into this relationship?
Do it. So Henry ends up asking Anne to be his, like, official mistress.
About a year into, like, writing her letters and just being obsessed with her, he's like, look, I want to make you the official mistress. Is it Mistress Entree? Is that how you say
yes.
it? So that, we've discussed that before, like in our French podcast, that was an official title at French court, the Mistress Entree, and it just meant official mistress. And it was a very powerful position at court, and it had never been an official position at English court. And he was like, I'm going to create this position, and you're going to have an income, you're going to have your ladies at waiting. So he was telling her, I'm not going to let you be like your sister.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you an income. You're going to have your ladies in waiting. You're going to be protected. I'm going to recognize our children together, blah, 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 blah.
He tried to French fry the English court.
He tried to French fry the English court for her because he knew how much she loved English culture.
And that was the whole thing, is that he was trying to make the mattress en titre or whatever title to be able to make her the official mistress, but she was having nothing of it.
He was like, I'm going to give you your own court. I'm going to give you all the jewels you want. You're going to have your own ladies in waiting.
Everybody gets a car.
What do you say? And she said no. She acts offended. She's like, why do you think I would just sleep with you?
Maîtresse en titre?
What have I done to make you think I'm such a slutty McSlut face, basically?
Right.
And he's just like,
the fuck?
What? Because, one, not only has no woman really ever turned him down before.
Because he's the King of England.
He's never made such a grand gesture to any woman before, besides his wife. And then to be turned down on top of that, he is just like, what the fuck just happened?
But that's exactly what happened.
And Anne, you know, she just kind of, like, disappears for... She lays low. She's like, I can't.
Yeah, she went back to Hever Castle and just kind of laid low while Henry continued to write her stalkery fucking letter.
Do we think she's playing hard to get, playing smart, or just not that into him at this point? I don't know. I think she definitely saw what happened with her sister and was like, well, I don't want to be the king's mistress for 4 years and then just be completely disregarded like that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that, but then part of me thinks that, like, at first she just, like, was not that into him, but you can't tell the king, I just don't like you.
Because we've seen what happens.
And then her family gets stripped of, like, all their land. Like, him just decides some reason to be like, well, then I'm going to imprison your father.
Yep.
You know, like...
Ha, ha, ha. See, for me, I guess, I saw, like, I mean, the original question that you said was, is she playing hard to get or is she playing smart?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was very clever the way that you worded
it.
Because to me, for her, playing hard to get is playing smart.
Well, yeah.
So for her,
no one's ever played hard to get with the king before.
So for her, it was, she was playing hard to get, but she was also playing smart at the same time because that's how she was going to get. So she knew the only way, like, I need to play this smart, and by playing smart, I need to play hard to get.
Exactly. No, I agree with that. I agree with that. It's just such a complicated... And we'll never know. We don't know her feelings because of their letters that were written back and forth to them. All the ones that Henry wrote her were preserved, and all the ones she wrote him have been destroyed.
Why? Because...
Well, he destroyed everything.
Because stalker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, it's like everything ends badly, and he's like, I have to burn the letters and get rid of everything. He was dramatic.
He That is an understatement. He was such an emo kid.
Extra.
So around this time, Henry tells Cardinal Wolsey, look, I want to get out of my marriage to Catherine. You need to investigate it.
And this has been in, like, Henry's mind for a while.
And that's another thing that, like, people are like, oh, Anne wanted to hold out so she would be made queen. No, at the beginning of this, she didn't have it in her mind at all that she would be made queen.
She didn't want any of it.
Well, let's say even if she did. Let's say she did want it. I still don't think that she ever had it in her mind that she would be made queen because kings married for alliances. Yeah. You know? The last time a king had married one of his subjects was Elizabeth Woodville. And look what that caused, you know?
Touché.
And that was, so there was Elizabeth Woodville, and before her, the last time the king had married one of his subjects was, like, in the 1060s or something, like, before the conquest. So, like, it just didn't happen. So I don't think she was thinking, oh, I'm going to play hard to get so I can become queen.
I'm Helena Bonham Carter, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Secret Heroes, a new series of rarely heard tales from World War II.
They had no idea that she was Britain's top female codebreaker.
We'll hear of daring risk takers.
What she was offering to do was to ski in over the high Carpathian mountains.
Of course it was dangerous, but danger was his friend.
Subscribe to History's Secret Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody shush! William Shatner has something to say.
Cat and Jethro, box of oddities.
What do you do when the woman you love dies? Well, of course you dig her up and you live with her.
Aww.
The show examines weird things.
There are plenty of old photographs from this time period of children out in the streets playing in and among the dead horse carcasses.
Oh, I miss those days. Things used to be so much simpler.
Cat and Jethro.
Then there's the urine wheel, which sounds like a really bad game show.
They've done weird things. Cat and Jethro, box of oddities. That is really mysterious.
Join Cat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the box of oddities.
The Webby Award-winning Box of Oddities podcast from Airwave Media.
So while Anne is gone, Henry's investigating how to become a single man. He thinks he's just going to send Wolsey off to Rome and be like, hey, look at this passage in the Bible. Don't marry your brother's wife. Bada bing, bada boom, single. In the early summer of 1527, Henry writes to her, has officially worn her down, whether that's from his love or his harassment.
Worn her down is an understatement.
Yeah. And he, like, officially proposes marriage to her. I mean, what is she going to say?
And I'm not really sure that she's in love with him. At this point, I don't think that she's in love with him. She's more scared to fucking
death. I mean, you don't say no to the king. Also, like, oh my fucking God. Like, kings don't propose to their subjects. And this is happening. You're going to say yes. Even if he's an 80-year-old ogre, you're going to say yes, but no, he's a young, hot king.
I mean, we were just talking about this, like, even, like, noble men who were in the court would say, if he was like, hey, mow my grass, they'd be like, sure.
Yes, sir. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
I don't want to die.
Yeah. So she accepts his proposal, and she sends him this ornament. It's a ship. And at the bow of the ship is, like, a woman standing alone. And then there's a diamond hanging off the front of the ship, this little trinket. To this day, historians still debate, what does that mean? But Henry took it to mean that it's a woman on a ship by herself, just trusting that the ship will get her where she needs to go. So she is the woman and the diamond, and he is the ship.
Ah.
And that was her saying, yes, I trust you.
No, see, what I saw was, is hers, the ship, the diamond, and the woman being like, let me get the fuck out of here.
That's not how Henry took it. Henry took it a completely different way. But no,
I'm going to take my money, myself.
But that's one of the reasons I think Henry loved her so much, because she was, like, a normal woman would just say yes or no. But she sends this cryptic device.
He ate that shit up. You know he did.
Ate that ship up. He ate that ship up, is what I said.
That's appropriate.
He just popped it in his mouth.
He put that wood in his mouth.
Oh, gross.
I'm sorry. Potty mouth.
But so it was her acceptance.
Yes.
So she comes back to court. Poor Catherine.
No, this whole time.
And she comes back to court. She is still technically a lady in waiting to Catherine, but she has her own apartments. She has her own jewels coming to her.
Yeah, at this point, she thought that she was just a mistress, and now Henry's, like, sending her money and land and power.
Exactly.
And so Catherine's going, wait a second, I'm Isabella and Ferdinand's daughter. I know some shit's about to go down. So
Henry had never flaunted a mistress like this before. Like we said, he had Bessie Blount before and then Mary Boleyn.
And they had like kids.
And they had kids together and stuff, but he had never, like, just so obviously, like, he was always respectful to Catherine in this. But with Anne, it was different. Like, he paraded her around. And
he was a little bit more extra than the other girls that he had paraded around.
In May 1527, the French ambassador comes to England, and two nights in a row, Henry dances with Anne. And, like, now you kind of think, like, well, okay, who cares? He danced with the same girl two nights in a row. But it was at a very deliberate time in the celebrations. It was deliberate to show the court, to show the French ambassador.
Dramatic.
To show, like, this is my boo.
And then literally, like, 12 days later after all of this, Wolsey states that he's really seeking an annulment between Catherine and Henry.
He starts, like, his secret council in Rome or whatever to, like,
so
get his annulment.
Is that just a coincidence that he's parading Anne around at the same time that he's getting an annulment? No, it's not a coincidence.
No, absolutely not. Just to wrap up, because we're getting to the end of this episode now, I'm not convinced that she loved him early on, but I do think by the time we get started on episode number 2 about Anne, I do think she loved him at that point. What do you think, she ever fell in love with him?
I think, well, for me, it's a toss-up between whether she really loved him or whether she really didn't. The love that I think that they had was incidental.
So you think
happened.
She just happened to love him because he was forcing it on her, basically?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd like that. If I had a toss-up, if I had to choose between whether she completely 100% loved him or didn't at all, I would say that it was an incidental love.
Okay.
Like, it was just something where, she learned.
Kind of almost a Stockholm syndrome?
Yeah. Like, she learned to love him. She learned to love him, and it was something that she didn't initially want at all.
Okay. So, Wolsey. So Wolsey goes away to try to, like, undo Henry's marriage to Catherine. And Henry tells Catherine, like, I plan to divorce you. But again, he never brings up Anne. He just is like, this is God's will. You were my brother's wife.
So
he brought up,
like we covered in the Catherine of Aragon episode, he brought up scriptures in Leviticus that were, if you lay with your brother's husband,
doesn't go well.
You wouldn't have babies.
Yeah.
And he's completely ignoring what Catherine of Aragon was saying in chapters of Deuteronomy, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But it's bullshit.
In the end, it doesn't go well. He's expecting Catherine to just be like, whatever you say, sir. But she throws a fight, like, puts up a fight. And then he's expecting Wolsey to come back and be like, the Pope agrees with us. Thumbs up. But he comes back and he's like, bad news.
The Pope has been taken hostage by Catherine's fucking nephew.
Yeah. And that's what we'll leave you. So to recap, Henry and Anne think they're going to be married within the year. And Catherine and Aragon is like, I don't think so.
I've got a nephew who's going to take the Pope over.
The Pope.
Cliffhanger.
So, thanks for listening, guys. This is our first three-part episode we're going to do. So this is usually where we wrap up someone's life, but we got a few more parts to do before that. So cheers!
Love you, Anne.
Bye, bitches!
Hello, everyone. It's Takuya here.
And I'm Gabby.
And we are the hosts of History of Everything, a podcast which you can probably guess by the name is, well, I mean, it's about everything. Do you want to know why people thought potatoes were evil and would give you syphilis? Are you curious about all the stories of the terrible and stupid ways that people have kicked the bucket over the years? Do you want to hear tales about all of the different badasses of history and the lives that they had brought to life? Well, if so, then look no further. History of Everything is just the right podcast for you. It's available on Spotify, Pandora, and anywhere else that you get your podcast from. Join us for some fun and just see how weird and wacky history can be.